Double M on the X joining me now in studio. He is the rising young star of the Pittsburgh sports media. He is Adam Crowley. Crowley, man, we were just talking off air about the policy the Steelers place on those reporting at practice. You've been to practice much more recently than I have, which is to say inside of the last 20 or 25 years. And it really is quite onerous. It's really quite a burden on the media to keep information from leaking out, isn't there?
Yeah, you're not allowed to have your phone out. If you have it out, you are going to get reprimanded. They built that big wall up where the train is on the south side in case Bill Belichick might be flying any drones in or anything like that. It's all state secrets in there, man.
Are they afraid the Russians or the Chinese will find out? Because I think it's taking things far too far.
Yeah, you can tweet something that you see happen in practice, and it's not going to let the Patriots or the Bills, in this case, know anything about what's actually going on. Well, it's a little over the top.
I think they do it just to control the media, don't you?
Well, there's a lot of that going on, yes.
And they do so very successfully.
They do. I, in fact, know somebody got reprimanded pretty scathingly the other day for tweeting out what happened in that fight between Chase Claypool and Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Okay, let me tell you a story about that, because this happens frequently.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the guys who cover the Steelers are so intimidated by and scared of the Steelers, but they want to screw them when they can. So stuff they're afraid to report, they call me with. Like, that's why I had details of the Minkah and Claypool fight, how I knew that Claypool yelled at T.J. Watt, "Yeah, well, at least I effing practice." You know, so it gets out there, and I'm appreciative of stuff like that because, you know, it's good for me. But, like, if I were those guys, I would want to report it myself. I'll give you an example, another one from back when. Remember when Joe Bendel had the locker room blow up with Ryan Clark?
Yes.
Okay, were you there?
I was his producer at the time, but I wasn't there.
It was great, though.
Yes.
Okay. And I took the sign from that and played it on my show. Joe was on opposite me. And he never played the sound because he didn't want the Steelers to get mad.
Yes, much to my chagrin, I might add. I desperately wanted that sound to be played. That's tremendous radio.
Who wins the fight, Ryan Clark or Joe Bendel? At that time, I think Ryan Clark wins, but I think he knows he's been in a fight. Joe Bendel's a tough McKeesport guy.
Oh, Joe Bendel would have landed a couple of shots. There's no question about that. He was always talking about how he was out at gin mills. I think he would have gotten at least one on the chin.
Now, T.J. Watt practiced today. Do you think that means he definitely has an extension in place?
Not definitely.
If he practiced with no extension, Crowman, that negates the intent of what he did by his passive holdout to this point.
Yes and no. I think you're willing to miss what you deem to not be as valuable in terms of the practices. And then now that it's game week and Wednesday's the official start of game week, you practice. I understand it from T.J. Watt's perspective.
So you don't think there's an extension?
I'm not 100% certain there is one. I wouldn't sign one if I'm not getting near $100 million guaranteed. That's the market value.
Yeah, but we're going to argue about that.
We are.
Because you're part of the pay Watt whatever he wants crew, and I just don't get that. Why?
I'm part of the I want the Steelers to be good contingent, and I think keeping your best player around is the smart thing to do. I understand where you're coming from as it relates to slapping the tag on him a couple of times. That makes
because you keep him around that way, too.
You do, and for cheaper. If you sign Watt to a contract, though, here's my devil's advocate view, and this is what I would do. You can sign T.J. Watt to a five-year deal. He can make everything he wants. But next year, he could be $10 million against the cap. The year after that, $15 million against the cap. After that, maybe you're looking at $50, $55 million. But at that point, okay, now you can renegotiate again. The cap's going to go up. I just think you want to keep good players around longer.
No, but I think you can do that via the franchise method. And I think 3 years with him is safer than five because of what happened with JJ. And I'm sorry, anybody who ignores that just isn't paying attention to I mean, football players, they get treated like horses in terms of bloodlines. Why would this not be relevant with the Watts?
It's tough to ignore, but here's how I'll ignore it. James Harrison won the DPOY at 32. Cam Hayward didn't start taking off till he was 28.
These are exceptions and not rules.
Perhaps. Joey Porter's best year happened not as a Steeler, but when he was 32 or 33 years old. He had 18 sacks. So I think the bloodline comparison is apt because they are related. But we've seen edge rushers perform at a high level into their 30s as well.
You see, I just want to play it safe. And I think the franchise thing plays it safe. And people say, well, then he'll be mad. Why do I care if he's mad? Why do the Steelers care if he's mad?
The only thing I'll say on that is I am over the no negotiations into the year nonsense.
Of all the long-standing policies I would like to see the Steelers waive, no guaranteed money past the first year, I totally agree with. Not firing the coach, I mostly agree with. But in terms of negotiating during the season, I don't see any harm in that. Because don't forget, it's not like Tomlin and Watt are talking.
No.
It's Art Rooney or Colbert.
It's really Omar Khan, too.
Right, and Watt's agent.
Right. I mean, it's not a distraction that's so overbearing that you're not going to be able to rush the quarterback. And the policy came to pass in 1993 when, you know, free agency's new and guys don't know how to handle it with one another in the locker room. It's 2021, and this idea that the Steelers do something that's so star-spangled, rainbow-out-your-butt-crack awesome, well, they haven't won a Super Bowl in 13 years. They've largely underachieved. It's okay to change some of your policies, and 31 other teams negotiate during the season. It's time to change your ways.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but I will say, no NFL team has been more successful over the past 50 years than the Steelers, and they have held all of these policies for all 50 years.
Yeah.
Especially since the cap.
Well, and now they've started changing some things. It hasn't, you know, bared any fruit. They traded a first-round pick for Minkah Fitzpatrick. They've started spending a little bit more money in free agency. They just made the Schobert deal, something that they probably wouldn't have done in years past. So they've changed some things. They haven't changed everything. This is a hill that they're apparently willing to die on. I just think it's not that big of a distraction.
And don't get me wrong. I'm glad the guy is going to play. I think they need him. There's an all-in type of vibe to this year with it likely being Ben's last. So you got to have him. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's why Ben spoke out on his behalf today, because Ben's speaking on behalf of this year and only this year because he's speaking on behalf of himself. Now, you saw what Roddy White tweeted.
I did.
Hey, why didn't you speak out for AB? Well, I can tell you why, because AB's a jerk-off. And Ben didn't care if he stayed or not. But there is the thing that he spoke out for one teammate, not the other. I mean, he's entitled to do that, but I can see where Roddy White's coming from a little bit.
Well, we know how the national media treats Ben, former players as well.
Especially when you conject even a smidgen of a racial issue.
I knew that today this was going to happen. I just thought the more apt comparison would have been Le'Veon Bell. That's a little bit more of a similar situation. Whereas Antonio Brown was the highest paid receiver in football. They paid him twice when they didn't need to pay him. Two times. So no one needed to ever speak out on behalf of Antonio Brown. He was also a jackass. And you just don't want to speak out on behalf of a jackass.
If you look at all the NFL players in the media who speak out and have spoken out on behalf of Antonio Brown, they're all jerk-offs. And they're just speaking out on behalf of another jerk-off, Roddy White being no exception to that.
Yeah, James Harrison made his initial media tour on behalf of Antonio Brown, speaking out against Mike Tomlin.
What a media career he's built.
It's because the only thing he had to stand on was pro-AB, anti-Mike Tomlin.
Although, have you seen him in that wrestling series, that Heels on Showtime?
No.
He's very good.
Really?
Yes, he's very good.
He's a scary man.
Not in that locker room. If James Harrison went to a wrestling locker room, they wouldn't even look twice. Okay, if you give TJ what he wants, and I'm assuming the Steelers are going to capitulate on this. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm assuming they're going to capitulate. What do you pay Minkah? You make him the highest paid safety.
I do, because they're in a cap situation where they can do that. If you had a quarterback that's making $40 million, you can't do it, and they're going to be in a position where their next quarterback's going to be on a rookie contract in all likelihood. Now,
Or a veteran who sucks on a low contract.
Well, so my caveat would be, if you go out and you sign a guy that's big time, or some miracle happens and you trade for a Rodgers, okay, then I'm not paying Minkah Fitzpatrick, then I'll slap him with the tag, I'll have fun doing that, what I would have done for TJ, but they're going to be paying a rookie. You can afford to pay premium players, young players, at important positions when you don't have to pay the quarterback. Look at the Browns now.
Well, yeah, but okay, are these important positions? I mean, you're going to have a lot of money tied up at edge rusher and safety, but how are you going to be at quarterback, cornerback, and left tackle?
I think edge is right behind left tackle.
I think edge is the fourth position, yes.
I'll take edge.
But it's still the fourth.
I'll take edge third behind tackle. You got to protect your quarterback. I think left tackle is so important because you got to defend against those edge rushers.
So you would put edge over cornerback?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. I think,
as people who covered the Steelers, we would say that.
Well, right. It's been the way that they've won games for their entire existence.
Whenever they draft a corner now, I assume he sucks.
And then they sign a guy, and you assume we're trade for one, and he's been good. They've had a lot of success doing that. But I just think T.J. Watt is one of the best players at his position, if not the most important, or if not, excuse me, the best at that position. If you're going to win in the next 3-4 years, you're going to have to do so on defense. The way you do that is you build around that.
Well, but now what determines, assuming they give him the deal he wants, what determines whether it was a good move? Right now I'd compare him to Kevin Green. But he can get better. You know, he's only in his fourth year, going into his fifth. If he can elevate to an Aaron Donald, Mean Joe Green-level player, then it's the right contract. But if he stays at Kevin Green, that's still a real good player, but it's Kevin Green.
He keeps getting better. What, 7, 13, 14 and a half, 15. His quarterback hit numbers and tackles for loss numbers have gone up every year. Like, I'll be very clear on this. I wouldn't be sitting here beating the table for a guy like Le'Veon Bell because it's a different position, and Le'Veon had been suspended multiple times, and Le'Veon was oft injured. None of those things are true with T.J. Watt, and he gets better every season. Eventually that stops, but I think he's a pretty safe bet to give a lot of money to.
You mentioned how the Steelers are going to have a lot of cap space next year, and they will. But when you give T.J. his deal and give Minka his deal, do you understand how much cap that absorbs right then and there? I don't think their roster is going to change a lot for having had this cap space. I think they'll basically retain a lot of their own key guys.
That's going to be a lot of it. But so if you look at Patrick Mahomes, he's on average, right, costing $45 million a season. But the way that it spreads out in terms of the cap money is next year it's $7 million. His cap hit is. Then it's like $10 million, something like that. You can be creative, backload these contracts, and I imagine that that's what the Steelers are going to do with T.J. Watt if they're going to give him what he asks for, and then you can always restructure later on, which they've been as good as any team in the league at doing.
That is Adam Crowley. I'm Mark Madden. When we come back, we'll talk about the Steelers and the Bills. That's Sunday, week one. It's the Mark Madden Show, 105.9 The X.
Mattress Warehouse. SleepHappens.com.
From the Century 3 Chevrolet Traffic Center.
Jammed up on 50.
Van.
Raise the Jolly Rancher.
The X at 105.9.
Mark Madden with Adam Crowley talking Steelers. If you're just tuning in, T.J. Watt did practice today. I'm assuming that means a contract extension. Adam Crowley not so sure. At one point, I thought the Steelers might have a chance against Buffalo. Now I just think they're going to get killed. Before Tua got hurt, well, before we knew he was going to be out, before Banner got hurt, before Watt stretched out his passive holdout this long, now Kendall Green is on the injury report. Too many, not horrible things have happened between a couple weeks ago and the opener, but enough that I don't think the Steelers can make a fist of it at Buffalo.
I'm with you on that. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I was sitting in your chair. I was hosting the show. You were off doing something a lot more fun than that. And I said, the Steelers are making the playoffs. Last time I did the show was last week, and I said, you know what? I'm not so sure the Steelers are going to make the playoffs. I look at this first game, and the left side of your line from center on over has started and played in 4 games. That is horrendous. And as much as I think that Zach Banner's just a guy.
And that's assuming Kendall Green plays.
Right.
But Kendall Green has, I mean, who would start? Hassenauer?
Yes, because Finney did not make the roster initially.
And Hassenauer has played, but not well.
Right.
He's just, and not much.
He's just a guy, too. I value experience. I'll take pedigree over experience, but more on your as your left tackle has neither. So I'm not crazy about that. And Zach Banner at least played. He's at least been a journeyman in the league.
Well, barely.
Still, I would take experience in Orchard Park when that crowd's going to be nutso before I'll take a rookie left tackle fourth-round pick.
You know what worries me with all that inexperience and frankly, poor quality on the offensive line, it worries me Ben could like get done in pretty quick.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny, too, because I haven't made my bet yet. Right now I'm leaning towards Steelers under 9.5, teasing at the 9.5, which would be plus 260. But then I would parlay it with finishing third in the division.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, which would have like pretty much an even money payoff.
Well, think about this. The Ravens' injury at running back, that doesn't concern me because I think you plug in anybody there and they're going to be able to run
the ball.
They
still have the Gus Bus, and he is a starting caliber NFL back. The problem is they only have one of those. I'm shocked they didn't go after Latavius Murray or haven't yet. What's New Orleans cut him?
They messed up because they signed Le'Veon Bell like 30 minutes after Latavius Murray hit the market, and I'm not sure that they wouldn't have done it the opposite way had they had information they were privy to before that. But think about the Steelers on the defensive line, too. Tyson Alualu did not practice today. So now you're down to it, potentially Alualu. So now you're looking at guys like Wormley or Mondu or Bugs.
More worrisome, Wormley having to stay on the field for nickel.
Yes.
You see, I think they're going to play nickel about 60, 65% of the time. So all I'm worried about is having enough guys to populate that that sub package. And even though you'd want to, Alualu is a decent fill-in on the nickel. But once you get past that, wow.
Yeah, then it's not good. See, I worry more about the Oki, the 3-4, even though you're only going to play at 20, 25%. Because that means Wormley has to be on the field in some capacity. When you go nickel, if you've got Tuitt and, or excuse me, if you've got Alualu and Hayward, I feel good about it. But you're right. If it's Wormley instead of Alualu, ugh.
Now, here's the most basic worry for me in this game. Who the frick covers Stephon Diggs? I was amazed, and I know he's good. I knew he was good back when he played for Minnesota. Remember when he left Minnesota for Buffalo? People were saying, why would you do that? As it turns out, just a great decision on his part. But I knew he was good. I didn't know he led the league in receptions and receiving yardage last year. We don't talk very much about this guy, but I think he's going to kill the Steelers, and I think Josh Allen's going to kill the Steelers.
Well, and the thing about Josh Allen has been, why did his completion percentage go up so dramatically? Well, I think you just answered part of it there. Stephon Diggs is really good. The thing about Allen that would worry me if I were a Bills fan, and what a sad existence that probably has been, is he had 9 games last year where he had a quarterback rating of like 120 or higher. And then he had 7 games last year where it was like 77 or lower. He's very boom or bust. Can he make that step this year to be more consistent? We'll see. But
yeah, but you know what's weird, though? When he has the games where his percentage isn't great, he still makes enough timely throws and long throws to make up for it. I mean, this is so cliched, but he passes the eye test and he's a winner. He's about more than stats already.
Just wait until the first crucial third down of the game. Mark my words, Steelers Nation. When the Steelers have everything covered up and Josh Allen scampers for 11 yards, runs out of bounds, and just continues to drive. He's so good at that, and it's incredibly backbreaking every time something like that happens.
I think Allen's one of the league's top 5 quarterbacks, and when I look at the Steelers' schedule, they play pretty much every single one of the league's top 5 quarterbacks, and that ain't good.
And a lot of them on the road, too. And
and Lamar twice.
Yes, and there are times when you look at the schedule and you say, okay, they got so-and-so at home. It could go either way. Vegas will probably have them the 3-point favorite. I'm telling you right now, they ain't going to Green Bay and winning. They're not going to go to Kansas City and win. Going to Los Angeles.
Well, they're
going
to be underdogs in 10 games, at least 10 games.
It's not a spot that they've been in a lot, but I'm looking at the schedule right now, and yeah, they're going to be underdogs a lot more than we're used to seeing around here.
Here's what worries me on their behalf for Sunday. I saw a fanboy website, one of the aggregating websites, say, if Steelers lose Sunday, it's not the end of the world, which I find funny because I think you should at least wait till the end of one quarter to surrender. But I agree with that sympathy as long as it's close. If they get beat by like 13 or 14, I think this team has the kind of psyche that's fragile after they lost 5 of 6 last year, where excrement could roll downhill fast and in great volume.
Yeah, if you play a game in Buffalo where I think it's going to be a madhouse because they're not used to seeing a good team and they've got a really good one, if you keep it close and you lose in the fourth quarter, okay, you've kept up with one of the league's best teams and the first half of your schedule is absolutely manageable. If you get run Well, then you got Vegas and Cincinnati. Could both be wins, both at home. Then you got to go to Green Bay. Then you got Seattle after that. Can you play well against really good teams if you just got shellacked by one? That would be my concern as well. But if they do hang in there against Buffalo, that beginning portion of their schedule I do think is very manageable.
See, here's what I think could happen, though. I think if they get beat by Buffalo by 14 or 16, then Vegas comes in here and either pulls the upset or almost does. Because Vegas don't stink.
They don't. And
I like Derek Carr. Always have.
He might be a guy that I'd kick the tires on next year, by the way. But I look at Vegas as a team. They got to come over here from the West Coast. That's always hard. First time back at Heinz Field.
And they play
the
Monday
fans
as well. They're going to play Monday and then come here from the West Coast.
Against Baltimore, too. That's never an easy task. The Steelers should, I repeat, should start off 2-1, potentially 3-2. And even Seattle, they're playing at home, which always against those West Coast teams is a good thing. My thing is, Mark, the last half of the season, each of the last three seasons, they've absolutely peed down their leg, and the schedule sets up for them to do that this year, too.
Oh, I call the last four games the death stretch.
I think they might be 8-3, and then the death stretch gets them.
Oh, no way. No way.
Mark Eboli has him 9-2 to start the year.
Well, he's insane. For one thing, I have him 7-6 after 13 games entering the death stretch. I have them at 2-2 after four games. But if they go less than 2-2, because they're going to lose at Green Bay and at Buffalo, if they blow it to Vegas or Cincinnati, things could go real bad.
Big time with you on that. You can't lose to Denver either. This is the year that you absolutely cannot afford to have that quote-unquote Tomlin loss against a sub-500 team, because you need to win all those games and a couple of toss-up games if you even want to be on the periphery of the playoff conversation. You lose one of those games, you ain't making one up in Green Bay, you ain't making one up in Kansas City. It just ain't happening.
That's Adam Crowley. I'm Mark Madden, 105.9 The X.
This report is sponsored by Safe Insurance.
Partly cloudy tonight, dropping down to 57 degrees. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow in the morning.
Call back when you're coherent.
The X at 105.9.
Double Adam with Adam Crowley in studio here on a Steeler Week 1 Wednesday. If you're just tuning in, T.J. Watt did practice today. Still don't know if he has an extension. I'm assuming he does. Crowley's not so sure. That's your prediction on Crowleyman, that he has not yet officially been extended?
Well, my prediction was to sit on the fence as to not be wrong, but I think we would have heard about it by now if he had the extension. What I think is happening is, you know, Mark Eboli tweeted out yesterday and wrote a piece about this, that Mike Tomlin would not say that he thought something was close or was optimistic if something wasn't close. I don't think that's right at all. I think he's trying to paint TJ as the bad guy if something doesn't get done. It's the same reason why Dulac reported the story a couple of weeks ago. I think the Steelers want it out there that they're close, and every day something goes by without it happening, I think looks worse and worse for Watt and not the Steelers.
Right, and that's very carefully orchestrated, and not for the first time either.
No.
I thought Tomlin also talked about TJ practicing Wednesday when he spoke to the media Tuesday. I think he did that to get through the press conference without having to address it more than with one line.
Yeah, I think that's fair too. I don't think Mike Tomlin knows what's going to happen, whether or not this is going to get signed before the start of the season. If it doesn't, I imagine Watt will play, because a lot of money starts coming out of your pocket if you don't, and you don't get any closer to free agency either.
The thing with this whole situation, and really any similar situation involving the Steelers over the last how many years, the Steelers lie all the time. So I don't believe a word they say, and I'm not sure I trust TJ Watt all that much either.
No. Here's my thing on this, Mark. If the Steelers didn't have the policy of making there be a deadline now, it's actually not as much of a distraction, I don't think. What they've done is they've created the start of the season, which is one of the most important times of the year.
Their policy creates the distraction.
Yes. It winds up creating this tension point, this flash point that doesn't need to be there. Let it hang over the head, quote unquote, during the season. What, Jake Gensel signed a contract a couple of years ago in the middle of the season. It happens all the time in hockey, and guys don't start punching each other in the locker room. It's fine. Let them work it out during the year.
Before we get even deeper into Steeler talk in this game with Buffalo, I'm picking Buffalo. Well, this isn't my official pick because I do that Friday. And Mr. Friday Afternoon has his pick as well, which we should all bet in the opposite direction. But I think the Steelers lose and Buffalo covers.
I'm with you on that. I just can't look at the way the season ended last year, see the Steelers' offensive line that's going to, quote-unquote, need time to gel, and think it's going to be all that pretty. I think the Steelers' defense can slow Buffalo down. I think they're good enough, but I think Buffalo ultimately pulls away a little bit in the fourth quarter because I just don't think the Steelers' offense is going to be able to keep up.
Yeah, I think Buffalo will cover late.
Yes.
I think it'll go like from 20 to 13 to 27 or 31 to 13 in the fourth quarter.
Well, think about this. You've got the Steelers as the biggest underdog week one. How many times does that ever happen when they're not playing New England? The biggest underdog in the sport week one, and they're tied with Cleveland. Cleveland's supposed to be a good team, but they're on the road at Arrowhead. I mean, that tells you something right there, too.
I bet that's a closer game than we think.
I think so. They played them tough last year in the playoffs.
I'd pick Cleveland to cover before I'd pick Pittsburgh to cover.
I would, too. I think they're built for it more. We'll see what the Steelers' running game looks like. We know what the Browns' running game looks like. I think they can take some of the air out of the ball in Kansas City.
Although I reserve the right to change when I make my official pick Friday, and indeed that's when I make my official season prediction. Because, again, 2 weeks ago I thought Pittsburgh could beat Buffalo. I thought Buffalo had had a disheveled camp with the COVID stuff and Cole Beasley. Ever since then, they've shut their mouths and put football first, and they're a good enough team where that's all the length of time they really need to do that to establish superiority, to my mind, in a matchup like this one.
I think Sean McDermott is an unbelievably good coach. He's taken an organization that had become a laughingstock, and they went 9-7 and went to the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor at quarterback when they never should have sniffed it. They had Josh Allen complete 54% of his passes. They made the playoffs. Last year, they were one of the best teams in the league. This guy has totally changed their culture, and I'm sure he put a stick up their rear ends and said, shut the hell up. We got a football game in a couple of weeks. Let's go. He reminds me a lot of Mike Tomlin. I think he has created a culture there in Buffalo where they believe that they're the best team in the NFL, and they've played like it at times.
I was also told that it was kind of hinted to Cole Beasley, look, your job security isn't that high that you can continue to disrupt, and that he took it seriously.
Well, if you say something, Mark, our bosses are going to let it slide. If Randy Bauman says something, I think our bosses are going to let it slide. If I say something, they're going to go, who? Okay, let's get rid of that guy. Cole Beasley's not a good enough player to be.
You're saying you're the Cole Beasley of radio.
I'm vaccinated, but I'm very similar. I'm a small white guy, and I probably think a little bit too much of myself.
Now, we got to talk about this Washington team name. They're currently the Washington football team. If I'm not mistaken, that applies for the rest of the year, right?
Yes.
And I think all the names suggested just stink, except for one, Red Hogs. Because Red Hogs is just so silly and stupid, I think they got to go with it. I wouldn't want my team to be the Red Hogs. I want some team to be the Red Hawks.
Well, if they were to win by storming back in the fourth quarter, you could say the Red Hogs are coming from behind.
Well, or Red Hogs throb in the last 15 minutes. I mean, yeah, stuff like that. I agree. But I mean, how can they have to see the double entendre there, don't they?
The testicular fortitude of the Red Hogs. I actually just like Washington football team.
I do too.
I think that sounds cool. I think everything else sounds really... The Red Wolves, I mean, unless you're going to make it about the plane guys in World War One, right? That was the Red Wolves, the Brits. Maybe you could do that, but I don't know.
It's very soccery.
Yes, if they're actual wolves, you might as well send the guys out there in scarves.
Washington football team is very soccery.
Yeah, but like in a cool way.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas, like, in soccer, like the MLS, they all change their names to so-and-so United, so-and-so FC, so-and-so City. They imitate the European concept to distraction. Like the Rochester Rhinos playing the Riverhounds League, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they are probably the most storied franchise of that league. They have a thing called the U.S. Open Cup that all the teams play in, MLS, the minor league teams. They won the U.S. Open Cup as a minor league team years ago, and now they've changed their name to Rochester City FC, which erases all their history.
Mm-hmm.
Columbus Crew tried to do that. The fans said, no, I don't think so. But Red Hogs, I'd like to hear their theme song.
At least they pay homage to a great time in Washington's football history if you go with the Hogs.
Right.
And I'm talking about some of the things Dan Snyder was accused of.
That's Adam Crowley. I'm Mark Madden. We'll be back to wrap up the hour. And we got Ian Eagle of CBS. You think he's the best play-by-play guy?
Sure, why not? He's coming on.
No, I mean, do you really?
He in terms of the 1 o'clock window, the 4 o'clock window, yes.
In terms of Sunday.
Sunday football, yes.
Who does play by play Sunday night again, and why don't I know that?
It's Al Michaels.
He's still really good.
Yes, he is. He would be my favorite.
Although he's one of those guys, I feel like I've heard him. I don't want to say too much. You know what I mean?
It's just when he talks, you feel like it's a big game. I think Ian's as smooth as anybody in the business, but he went to Syracuse, so F him.
I'll give an example. I'll be listening to Sirius Radio, and I'll have classic rock on, and Stairway to Heaven comes on. I'll say, oh, let's see what's on Stern. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's one of the greatest songs ever. I just heard it too many times.
Yes.
That's Crowley on Madden 105.9.
After a two-year wait, our iconic iHeartRadio Music Festival is finally back. Tonight, September 17th and 18th.
Live radio for 30 seconds, and you all listen.
The X at 105.9.
Now, girls, why don't you give it to them one more time? Woo! That's who's standing here today. The world heavyweight champion. Only one. And you're looking... Oh, girls, I can't stand it. Now I got to talk. We all got to be quiet.
Imagine hearing that for hours at a time in a bar. Because he doesn't break character very often. It's the Daily Flair here on the X. What are your expectations for Najee Harris on Sunday at Buffalo? And what are your expectations for their commitment to the running game then and in general?
I think they're going to have to abandon the run. I just think it's too early in the process for an offensive line with four starts on the left side to expect there to be much traction at all. I think Najee Harris is going to have a pretty good year. I bet he has around 500 receiving yards. I bet he has over 1,000 yards on the ground.
That's what I predicted, over 1,500 yards between rushing and receiving.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a big part of the offense, and I think at running back, you can step in and be successful right away. I just think it's a tall ask for it to be right away.
Yeah, but boy, if they only run the ball like 11 times Sunday, that's a bad precedent. We'll get a lot of criticism in the media and with the fans.
Here's my prediction. I think you're going to see on the Steelers' first drive, they're going to take a play-action shot, maybe on the first or second play, deep down the field to Chase Claypool. Give the appearance that they're going to be trying to run the ball. And I imagine they'll try to run the ball a bunch early. But I do think that the game will get away from them later on. And when that happens, you're going to have to give up on the run.
Is the line better or worse off with Moore replacing Banner during Banner's injury? I'd say it's worse for the run, maybe better for the pass.
What scares me is he's not good at defending the speed rusher. And he's the starting left tackle now in the NFL, having never played a game. I mean, that terrifies me. If I were the Steelers, I'd have played Moore at right tackle and Chooks at left tackle. We heard all offseason that Chooks is a better left tackle than he is right, and now he's going to play right. It just doesn't make sense to me.
It does if they were lying in the first place.
Well, and that very well could be the case. I don't have any faith that it's going to look good early.
Well, and I was surprised they didn't put Moore at right tackle.
Yes.
I was surprised. And part of the rationale I've heard is that they like Moore at left better than right. But boy, then you're just saying this guy's better here, this guy's worse there. And some of the descriptions conflict and we're supposed to believe everything.
Well, and what's that point to? I mean, if a whole bunch of word salad vomit's coming out, that's telling me that they don't have a lot of faith in what they got going on out there either. I think the one bright spot about the line being so young is you're going to have a pretty good idea whether or not they've got the dudes in place come 2022 when Ben's not here anymore. Do they have to invest a bunch in the offensive line after this season, or do they have the guys here already? We will know because they're playing two rookies and one guy who's only started four games.
Well, they're starting four rookies total, and it's worth noting that's not because they want to. That's because they have to.
Yeah, it's not super high pedigree guys either. I mean, Najee Harris is going to be good. I have no doubt about that. But you're starting a fourth-round pick at left tackle. That's not good.
Third-round pick at center, although a lot of centers do come out of the middle rounds.
Center doesn't scare me because we've seen it happen a lot, and it was a deep year at center in the draft. I like Kendrick Green a bunch. Dan Moore Jr., for all the tackles that there were supposedly in this draft, wasn't one that I was excited about going in.
What about tight end where they have Freiermuth and Ebron listed as co-number ones? To me, that says they're going to use a lot of double tight, maybe even come out double tight, which of course means they really didn't need Juju. But I do like them in double tight because it gives the defense a lot more to think about. and maybe to some degree, not because those two guys are good blockers, because they're decidedly not, but maybe just the look they provide takes a little pressure off that offensive line.
I think you're right about that. I mean, at the very least, you're chipping dudes coming off the line. Both guys can attack up the seam. I think Freiermuth's going to have a really nice year. I drafted him in fantasy, in fact.
I think he's going to be big in the red zone.
Big time. He didn't have a red zone drop at Penn State. He's got sure hands, which you can't say about Ebron, but both guys can stretch the field from that position. And, boy, it creates matchup problems. They can do that. At their skill positions, they're good. Defensively, they're good. The question is, can the offensive line hold up enough for any of that to matter? And we'll have to see.
Well, here's the thing about the Steelers when they have the ball. That Buffalo defense isn't great in terms of yards and points allowed. I mean, it's pretty good, but they get a lot of takeaways. They're just behind the Steelers on takeaways. Tre'Davious White, to me, is one of the top five cover corners in the league. I think that the Steelers are going to commit turnovers against this team.
Yeah, Edmonds is good, too. They've got Ed Oliver. I mean, it's a defense.
Real good safeties, too.
Yes.
A bunch of really opportunistic guys.
And you have to play catch-up with them a lot. That's one of the reasons why they were as opportunistic as they were last year. Because you know when you play Buffalo with how good their offense is that you're in a track meet. The Steelers need to get back to old school football in a game like this. They need to be able to run the ball. They need to be able to keep the football for an extended period of time. I think there's a chance that happens. They were the 10th best team in time of possession last year, and they couldn't run the ball worth a lick. I expect them to be able to run the ball a little bit better this year, so maybe that's the strategy in the early going.
How long do you think Tua's going to be out for? Because that doesn't sound good, and we still don't know exactly what's wrong either.
If it's a knee...
Well, we hear knee, we hear the grieving thing, we hear he's out of shape, or maybe all of the above.
It sounds like it's the holy trifecta there, and all sympathy to him for the loss of his brother. That's obviously awful, but from a football standpoint, you know, Mark Caboli predicted he might not be back until December. If he's not back until December, that's a huge deal for the Steelers. He had 11.5 sacks last year. He was their second best defensive player, I think, behind T.J. Watt. You lose a guy like that, I'm sorry, Steelers Nation. It matters. You can't just gloss over losing your second-best defensive player, and that's what he was last year.
What's Joe Schobert's impact going to be? Because I've come to believe that he might be a guy who provides the glue for the playmakers. I look at that defense. It has a lot of playmakers. It has a lot of holes, too. Maybe Schobert kind of fills in some of those holes and makes everyone around him better.
I think they play a lot more nickel now than dime because he can cover and Devin Bush can cover. I also think that you need to have that Robin to the Batman of Devin Bush. They were really bad at their second ILB last year. I mean, Vince Williams isn't a modern day backer, whereas Joe Schobert is. That's an area of the team that I'm bullish on that I was absolutely not coming in. I think they're better there and an outside backer than they were last year, and that should go a long way to making it still a top-five defense in the league.
What do you expect from Devin Bush, who was kind of quiet during camp, was hurt last year? I'm not saying he's a bust, but I think it's fair to say that the Steelers would have every right to be disappointed by him so far.
Oh, definitely, especially if you factor in some of the off-the-field stuff and the dead cat video, which was just grotesque, and then him saying that the Steelers don't own him and he can do whatever he wants on social media. Just a bad look. On top of the fact that he's only played, 22, 21 games in his career? He has as many fumble recoveries and interceptions in those games as Devin White did in his playoffs last year for Tampa Bay. That's what you need to see from a guy that you pick in the top 10, especially when you trade up to get into the top 10. I think he can be an impact player, but I'm not sure he's 100% right now, and I don't know if he's going to hit that mark until he gets about halfway through the year.
See, I worry that he's going to be one of those first-round picks who was pretty good. You're not sorry you took him, but you just needed a little more, which is how I look at Terrell Edmonds right now.
I think that's fair, and Matt Williamson and I talk about this all the time, but Devin Bush ain't ever getting taller, and you would love your inside linebackers to be able to help out against tight ends in the red zone, things of that nature. And Devin Bush can run with the guy stride for stride. He's got the speed. He's got the change of direction ability, but he's never going to be tall. And this just in, the Travis Kelce's of the world are tall.
We still don't know who the nickel back is going to be. it'll probably be Sutton moving inside, but, you know, the third corner, the fifth defensive back. Why is that such a secret? Or maybe they haven't decided yet because there's no easy choice.
Yeah, I think eventually Witherspoon will be on the outside and Sutton will be on the inside. I do. He was a really good player last year. And from everything that I read in Seattle, he did nothing that really made any of the beat writers understand why he wouldn't be a Seahawk this season.
Boy, that is a real indictment of Pierre and Lane, especially Lane, who was a third-round pick.
Oh, I think Lane, I don't think he should factor into this at all. Pierre, I think it's more about, are we going to put too much on him too early? With Lane, I think it's maybe it's going to start passing him by pretty quickly here.
Growl, man, great stuff. Thank you for joining me. We'll do it again next week if you're available. You're picking the Bills to cover.
I am.
There you go.
Bills by 9.
Bet over your head and not with it. I'm Mark Madden, 105.9 EX.
Weekday morning, 6 till 10, it's Abby. The most music in the morning.
Hi, I'm Music. You can find me right here now.